Why? This is where we have to realize that, you know, when you look at these terms, Islam and Kufr, they are the opposites. Islam is on one side, the opposite of that would be Kufr. When you look at Iman, what is the opposite of Iman? It is Nifaq. It is not Kufr. And this is where we see that, you know, and the difference between the two is that Islam resides on the tongue. In a sense, we have no choice but to recognize somebody by whatever he or she says. If they come and recite the kalima, we don't have a choice but to accept them as Muslim. What is in their hearts, we don't know. Allah knows better. But when it comes to Iman, Quran is very clear about it, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, in different places. Whenever he talks about Iman, he relates that to the heart, not to the tongue. For example, in Surah Hujarat, Surah number 49, ayat number 14 and 15, there's a very beautiful story there behind this revelation of these two ayats. There was a tribe, a Bedouin tribe in Arabia, and they were suffering from famine, didn't have much to eat. They were running out of their grain. And so they were looking for solutions to their own problem. Somebody told them, you know, why don't you go to Medina? There is a new prophet there. Go and accept him and he will give you zakat, help you with the food. So when they went there to Medina, the delegation of the tribe, and they talked to the prophet in a way as if they were, you know, doing a favor to Rasul by accepting Islam. And they used the words amanna. Amanna means we have iman. No, Rasulullah was very kind. Huh? The different situations in Quran, you will see that Rasulullah would be lenient. He will ignore, you know, the attitude of the Arabs. But Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, no, I don't have haya here. If you misbehave with Rasulullah, I will come in and correct you. And so ayat came down. قَالَتْ الْعَرَابُ آمَنَّ O Muhammad, this Bedouin tribe, they have come to you and they say, آمَنَّ قُلْ لَمْ تُؤْمِنُوا Say to them, you don't have iman. Rather, what should you say? وَلَكِنْ قُولُ أَسْلَمْنَا At the most, what you can say is that you have accepted Islam. Don't claim to be mu'min. Muslim, yes, because whoever says the kalima, we don't have a choice but to accept him. Why does Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, لَكِنْ قُولُوا أَسْلَمْنَا You say أَسْلَمْنَا, not آمَنَّا وَلَمَّا يَدْخُلِ الْإِيمَانِ فِي قُلُوبِكُمْ Because iman has not yet entered your hearts. It could enter later on. But at the moment, no. You just have Islam on your tongue. In your heart, there is nothing. And of course, if you obey Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and the Prophet, you know, you will be rewarded for it. And then in the next ayat, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, إِنَّمَا الْمُؤْمِنُونَ الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا بِاللَّهِ وَرَسُولِهِ A true definition of a mu'min is somebody who believes in Allah and Rasul, ثُمَّ لَمْ يَرْتَابُ And his iman is so strong that he then never entertains any doubt under any circumstances. He is very solid. وَجَاهَدُوا بِأَمْوَالِهِمْ وَأَنفُسِهِمْ فِي سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ And they are willing to sacrifice their wealth and their lives for the sake of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. أُولَٰئِكَ هُمُ الصَّادِقُونَ They are the true mu'mineen. And so Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala separates iman from Islam. Islam is a matter of tongue, whereas iman is the matter of heart. And therefore, we call Ali as Amirul Mu'mineen, not Amirul Muslimin. Because being Amirul Muslimin is just more a political position. Whereas Amirul Mu'mineen is somebody, you know, he's the leader of those who are true believers in Allah and Rasul. And this was a title given to him by the Prophet himself. In Ghadir, after the declaration, the Prophet asked the Sahaba to go to Ali and congratulate him and to do salam on him bi amratil mu'mineen, on the basis of him being the Amir of the mu'mineen. And not only that, we see that according to our aqidah and belief of the Shias, this is an exclusive title only for Ali. You will never see any in Shia books or in a speech by a credible Shia scholar describing Imam Hassan or Imam Hussein or Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq or even our present Imam as Amirul Mu'mineen. It is not even for the other Imams. This is an exclusive title given to Ali bin Abi Talib alayhi salatu wasalam. Just one hadith, you know, for barakah here before I conclude the khutbah. And this is from Kanji al-Shafi'i, a Sunni scholar. He narrates through his sanad and chain going all the way to Abdullah bin Abbas, where he said that once the Prophet said to Salama, Ummul Mu'mineen, let me just make a point here. Sometimes I see the, you know, Mu'mineen doing the ziyarat of Bibi Khadija and they say, Ummul Mu'mineen wal Mu'minat. You know, just do what you've been told to do. Quran says that the wives of the Prophet are Ummahatul Mu'mineen. The word Mu'mineen is gender neutral. It covers the men and women of Iman. You don't have to add those words, you know, Ummul Mu'mineen wal Mu'minat. Then what will you do? Will you say Ali Amirul Mu'mineen wal Mu'minat? We don't say that. And so, you know, just use what you have been told by the Quran and the Ahlul Bayt. You know, don't try to go, you know, edit those words. So Rasulullah was talking to Salama, Ummul Mu'mineen, and he says, Ali was there. Hada Ali ibn Abi Talib. This Ali ibn Abi Talib, lahmuhu min lahmi. His flesh is from me. Wa damuhu min dami. His blood is from me. وَهُوَ مِنِّي بِمَنْزَلَةِ هَارُونَ مِنْ مُوسَى. His position to me is like the position of Harun to Musa, إِلَّا أَنَّهُ لَا نَبِيَّ بَعْدِي. The only difference is that there is no Nabi after me. While Harun was also a Nabi. يَا أُمَّ سَلَمَا هَذَا عَلِي. O أُمَّ سَلَمَا, this Ali is Amir al-Mu'mineen. وَالسَّيِّدُ الْمُسْلِمِينَ. Say the word. Muslimin is not attached with the term of Amir. وَوِعَاءُ عِلْمِي. And he is the one who is the recipient of my knowledge. وَوَصِيِّي. And he is my successor. وَبَابُ الَّذِي أُوتَ مِنْهُ. And he is the gate through which you will come to me. أَخِي فِي الدُّنْيَا وَالْآخِرَةِ. He is my brother in this world and the hereafter. مَعِي فِي الْمَقَامِ الْعَعْلَى. He is with me at the highest status. يَقْتُلُ الْقَاسِتِينَ وَالنَّاكِثِينَ وَالْمَارِقِينَ. This is very interesting. He talks about the future, that Ali will fight three groups, قَاسِتِينَ, نَاكِثِينَ, and مَارِقِينَ, referring to the people of Jamal and Safin and Nahrawan. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in the Quran has ordered the Prophet, جَاهِدِ الْكُفَّارِ وَالْمُنَافِقِينَ. O Muhammad, fight against the kuffar and the munafiqeen. Rasulullah in his life never fought against the munafiqeen. All the battles were in whatever form, whether defensive or not, but it was with kuffar. The application of that other part of the ayat is by the wali of Rasul, where he is dealing with the munafiqeen of his own time. And that is where the Prophet says, he will kill, he will fight the Qasiteen and Nakithin and Mariqeen.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar, Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
روحي كريم عظيم عليم حليم حكيم متين غفور شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف صبور مجيد صلي على محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صلوا عليه.
Aperture.
Back to Aperture, everyone. In the first part of the documentary, we met the hidden victims of America's multi-billion dollar chemical industry. By offering an excellent wage and a comfortable retirement package, chemical giants Dow Chemical and DuPont factories are welcome wherever they go. For many of the town's residents, a job at Dow Chemical or DuPont marks the beginning of a very glimmering future. Yet, victims like Alice, Kenton, and Rukna have seen the ugly truth behind this prosperity. Don't go away. Here's the rest of our program.
850 children are now registered at Rashida B's center. In 2015, Dow gave $4.5 billion to its shareholders, but not a single cent has been given to the decontamination of Bhopal. For weeks, we tried to reach the communications department at Dow to get an interview, without success.
The water that people drink. Who's going to answer those questions? It's really important.
I'm not aware of who that is right off the top of my head. We have 50,000 employees, so I'll have to do some research.
Dow never called us back, so we decided to go to the company's General Assembly in Midland, in the U.S., to ask our questions. A few days later, we finally received an email from Dow. The company laments, "Bhopal was a terrible tragedy that we will never forget." But they relieved themselves of all responsibility, stating that, "We acquired Union Carbide more than 16 years after the catastrophe of 1984.
Dow continues to address global issues through human solutions. Issues like clean water, as important as life itself. Dow is working to make water safe and readily available to people all over the globe. The human element. Nothing is more fundamental. Nothing more elemental."
In Dow's wake, countless victims and human tragedies pile up without any damage to the company's profits. In December 2015, Dow announced the biggest financial operation in its history, a merger of $130 billion with another American chemical giant, DuPont. A match made in heaven.
It wasn't beautiful. You and DuPont, there's a lot of good chemistry between us.
DuPont made its fortune with dynamite, nylon, and Teflon, the magical material that prevents food from sticking to pans. However, behind the success of Teflon, DuPont hides a dark secret.
I just can't believe that DuPont, the money means more than people.
There's people dying because of what they've done.
DuPont knew years ago what they were doing.
At best,
It's despicable. At the worst, it's criminal.
At the heart of this drama is one city, Parkersburg. Lost in the eastern U.S. The city was built around the DuPont factory. Suzanne Bailey came here in 1978 to work on the Teflon production lines.
I went to work in May the 8th, 1978. That was my glorious day, right there. They took our pictures.
It's you?
That's me, without gray hair.
In the middle?
Yep. You know, I was so happy.
You're smiling.
I was. That was the elite job. I mean, everybody wanted to go there because for the money, for the benefits, and everything like that. It was secure.
The chemical industry is a growing one, growing by leaps and bounds.
I mean, you could just mention the DuPont name and doors swung open. It was like princes coming through the door, you know?
Yes, in such an environment, you can look to a bright future with confidence and optimism.
Were you at peace, though?
I was thrilled. I was absolutely thrilled to death.
A few months after starting her job at DuPont, Suzanne Bailey became pregnant. In January of 1981, she gives birth to little Bucky.
When he was born, it was very traumatic. They didn't know what to do with him. They'd never seen anything like it. I could not figure out what happened. He had half a nostril, half a nose. The eye is a keyhole pupil. I didn't know what to do. I was afraid he was going to die in my arms. I had no idea what was wrong.
Bucky survived. He is now 35 years old. But his childhood was spent between his home and the hospital.
I had 30 surgeries in a span of, you know, 6 to 7 years. Where they took rib cartilage to form my nose. I have a metal plate here. They stretched my forehead out so that they could use that skin and bring it down and mold my nose here. I still only have one nostril, functioning nostril.
We had to put the hockey mask on him and the guards because he wasn't allowed to touch his face.
For how long?
He had to wear those for, I would say, 3 months, 4 months.
Long time.
Yeah, the only way that he got to take him off was just to eat.
How is it as a kid to grow up and to have, you know, so many surgeries? And I mean, it's pretty intense, you know.
Walking out in public and going into a store or a restaurant, and as soon as you enter, all the eyes are on you. And school, when you go in and you're trying to make new friends, all they see is you're different.
After her maternity leave, Suzanne Bailey began to suspect her job as the cause of Bucky's deformities. A mysterious source tips her off to one molecule in particular, C8, the molecule in Teflon that stops food from sticking to pans.
When I went back to work the first day, I went to the locker and I found the paper laying there. I picked it up and I began reading about it. It was talking about how the rats were fed the C8 and what deformities that it had around her face. And I thought, that sounds just like Bucky.
It was very similar to what Bucky had.
Absolutely. Very similar, almost identical to what he had. That's why I knew that there was something wrong. That's why I connect.
The scientific study Suzanne Bailey found had been conducted by a subcontractor of DuPont. It studied baby rats whose mothers were exposed to C8. They developed abnormal eye lenses.
I immediately walked out that door, went down to medical, and I said, is this what's wrong with my baby? Oh, no, no, no. Nothing on this planet will hurt you. That was the motto. That's what they always say.
Yeah.
Nothing here will hurt you.
But in the meantime, DuPont was secretly investigating the pregnant women working in their factory. Two out of seven children born to the factory workers had facial deformities like Bucky. Shortly after, DuPont decided to transfer Suzanne Bailey and her colleagues to other departments. At the time, Kenton Wamsley also worked in the manufacturing department of Teflon. He remembers the discussion he had with his manager.
He said, "Ken, we sent all the women home out of Teflon, all of them." He said, "Oh, don't worry. It won't hurt the men, just the women. We feel that it can cause trouble." So I thought, won't hurt me.
Kenton Wamsley was a lab technician. He handled C8 for 30 years.
Breathe the fumes from them, all the samples we breathe. But we just, you know, at the time, we thought DuPont would take care of us. And so I just did my jobs for years and years, you know. And we didn't realize it. Our health was an issue then. Surgeon diagnosed me as having cancer. It had to take all my rectum, part of my colon.
Now Kenton Wamsley has to live with an ostomy bag attached to his stomach. He changes it day and night. At the factory, he worked in a team with three other technicians.
My buddies, people I really love, seen them every day, cared about them. Those guys are all dead, and I should have been. They didn't even see retirement. None of them.
Wamsley and his colleagues were never warned about the risks of C8. However, we procured a confidential document from DuPont. It's dated 1982, 34 years ago. In it, Mr. Rector at the time expresses concern about the consequences of C8 retained in the blood of employees. He specifically recommends that practical steps be taken to reduce this exposure.
All employees, not just Teflon area workers, are exposed. So rather than to do anything, they just wrote it out. I've never seen a letter like that. I'm mad. You can see why. We could have prevented a lot of lies if they would have told us there's a problem. Why'd they cover it up? Why'd they lie? Why didn't they have us protected? Too costly?
We tracked down Bruce Carr, DuPont's former medical director. He is now enjoying a peaceful retirement by the ocean, far from Parkersburg.
I have a document of 1982 showing that you were aware that C8 was toxic for workers. Why have you not told them the truth at that time?
They were all told the truth. They were told everything we knew at the time.
Actually, no. I have interviewed some employees and they were not aware of anything.
We told employees everything we knew as soon as we knew it. If you go back to 1982, you're trying to do reconstruction history, and you can't do that.
Why have you not protected your employees? Il a raccroché.
DuPont would not only put their employees in danger. Once again, tens of thousands of people would be affected. They live up to 70 kilometers away from the factory. One man would discover this, a bit by accident. Joe Kiger. On October 31st, 2000, he receives a letter from the municipality concerning the quality of the tap water. It mentions C8.
I was sitting in my courtyard, and the wife was watering the flowers, and we got our water bill in the mail, and with that bill came a letter. It's like you get form letters all the time. So you look and say, oh, okay, bang. You put it over and you don't think about it. Next thing you know, you throw it away. And that's basically what this was. It just caught my attention, and I started reading through it, and then the flag started popping up. First of all, what was C8 here, mm-hmm. which is used by DuPont Works? Well, what's DuPont have to do with our water?
Joe Kiger sought clarification on the matter.
I called DuPont to try to find out. So they put me in touch with a guy, a gentleman named Mr. Kennedy. And I said, you know, I'd like to know more about this C8 issue. He just told me it's nothing to worry about. about. It was just a byproduct of Teflon, and it wasn't anything to worry about. And he was flat out lying to me, I could tell that.
To get to the bottom of it, he takes DuPont to court. After a long legal battle, the judge forces the company to declassify their internal studies on C8. Joe Kiger discovers the truth behind the factory at Parkersburg. For decades, they've been dumping C8 waste into the river. To make things worse, DuPont has known since 1984 that the molecule spread into the region's tap water. The company found astronomical levels in public taps, up to 50 times the limit of toxicity, according to the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency.
That was 1984, and we didn't come out till 2000.
So with a, 16 years.
Yeah, before we even hit them up about it. And they chose, as you see right here, they chose not to do anything about it. And they knew what was coming with the liabilities if they got caught. They were trying to slide under the radar. People trusted DuPont for so long. They have done nothing but lie for years to people about what this stuff's all about. There's sick people out here because of what they've done. There's people dying because of what they've done.
During all these years, more than 70,000 people have been drinking contaminated water. In 2011, both scientific research and the U.S. justice system established that C8 could cause six diseases: thyroid disorder, high cholesterol, ulcerative colitis, high blood pressure, kidney cancer, or testicular cancer. Today, 3,500 people in the Parkersburg region are ill. They've all filed complaints against DuPont. This is the case for Earl and Gwen Botkin.
I've had ulcerative colitis for about 17 years, and it's about killed me a couple times. I still have thyroid problem, and I have high cholesterol. And those are all associated with C8.
Today, Earl Botkin doesn't have a colon anymore. He, too, is living with an ostomy bag.
So all of a sudden, you don't function normally, but you have your bowel movement on your side. And that's what I'll live with until I die. And there's not any hope of that's going to change. It controls where I go, what I do, and what I eat. And just controls a lot of things in my life. But anyway, I lived through that.
A document reveals that all of these victims could have been spared. On May 22, 1984, a meeting took place at the DuPont headquarters. The directors are worried about the consequences for the inhabitants. They plan to eliminate all C8 emissions. But finally, no measures are taken. Their argument, it's not economically attractive.
That was in what year?
84. That's before we were married. That's a long time ago. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Long, long time ago.
That's crazy. That's what makes it so bad, you know, that they had evidence all along and just disregarded it and kept doing what they were doing.
It was company greed that caused this whole situation. They knew what they were doing to us, and they continued to do it for money. That's the only reason they continued to do it.
DuPont refuses to collectively compensate the 3,500 sick people. They prefer to study the cases one by one. As a result, since 2012, only one victim has been able to get a trial. DuPont was sentenced to pay her $1.6 million. The 3,499 remaining victims, like Earl Botkin, are still waiting. At the current pace of the trials, the last one would take place in 100 years.
Do you still trust and you're still confident that you will get a trial at some point?
Oh.
He lives long enough.
If I live to be 150, I'm right. There will be a trial someday. But the chances of me living long enough to ever see that are probably slim to none. But we're just another document, another number of cases to be tried. DuPont has made billions of dollars. And I think they should stand up to what they've done and make it right with the people they've made sick.
DuPont refused all of our requests for an interview. So we drove to their headquarters in Delaware on the East Coast to convince them to answer our questions. At the other end of the line, we reached the head of media relations, Daniel Turner.
We are doing a documentary piece. The best way is, you know, we meet and to make a proper interview, you know, at some point. But first, let's meet. You know, I'm just here.
I will provide you with a statement.
You know, there is like an incredible amount of documents showing that you have known at DuPont for the past 30 years that C8 was toxic, and you know that you were poisoning your employees at the Washington Works plant and the Parkersburg citizen. Why are you not recognizing the fact that you have deliberately poisoned thousands of persons?
Okay, so are those the questions you're asking?
Yeah. This is my questions.
Okay. I'll be happy to provide with our statement.
Today, we are in 2016. There are still 3,500 persons with severe disease that are waiting to just have the right to get a trial. I mean, for how long are you going to deny your responsibility? Are you waiting that they all die?
So, we will provide you with a statement for your piece.
Nothing else? No?
Like I said, we will provide you with a statement. Thanks so much. Have a good day. Bye.
Bye.
We did receive a press release from DuPont, but without a single word for the victims. They claim to have studied C8 carefully for decades and affirm to have always acted responsibly. In 2015, DuPont finally stopped using C8. The company was also ordered by the courts to clean up the region. But how many generations are still to experience the after effects of this contamination? In the chemical world, history inexorably tends to repeat itself. It takes decades to reveal the truth. And just as many years for the multinationals to be prosecuted. In their laboratories, new toxic molecules are constantly being developed. But in 10, 20, 30, or 40 years, who knows how many new victims will be poisoned?
Merged together, Dow Chemical and DuPont create the world's largest chemical company in terms of sales. Yet, the victims' testimonies, those whose lives have been poisoned, will forever cast a shadow over this industry as they fight in the hope that someday their culprits will be brought to justice. And that's it for this week, everyone. Join us next time for another documentary. It's goodbye.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
With the presence of different scholars. IRIB English Radio.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. Very welcome to another episode of the program Viewpoints. I am Atal, the host of this program. Sayyid Mohsen Naghvi and Shaykh Rouhani are two special guest speakers for today's discussion. Sayyid Mohsen, assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
And Shaykh Rouhani, assalamu
alaikum. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Okay, for today's discussion, we want to talk about the significance and the position of spirituality in today's world. We know that day by day, the people are believed to be away from spirituality, and we can say they live in this modern world with all its industrial development. From the other side, some of the religious people, they say that the spirituality is finding its true place again in the lives of the people, because people missed it, and now they are looking for new meaning in life through spirituality. Shaykh Rouhani, let's start with you, brother. When we talk about this spirituality or ma'naviyya in today's world, what we are exactly talking about?
You know, spirituality is, of course, nowadays becomes very much important and significant, mostly for the modern world.
Yes.
Because in the traditional worlds, in Islamic society, for example, in religious societies, we already have this kind of spirituality in the, let's say, religious environments. But in the modern world, we have the problem of spirituality, we can say, because the lifestyle of the modern world is completely earthly life, worldly life. That is why when you restrict or you limit each and everything in your life into the physical and bodily and, let's say, earthly life, then of course you will lose that spiritual phase of life, that we can say transcendent phase of life. That is why spirituality will become more and more significant and important for you. This is the reason that nowadays we see that spirituality is important for the modern, let's say, generations. And the other point is that human being naturally always seeking spirituality in their lives.
Yes.
Because from the very beginning of the history of the mankind till now, we see that always the people try to find out that transphysical or spiritual or, let's say, transcendent phase of their life, phase of their existence, when they were looking at the universe, at the sky, at the earth, at the nature. They're always trying to find out some kind of spiritual aspect, some kind of, let's say, spirituality in their lives, because by this kind of spirituality, they will enjoy a better life. They will enjoy a kind of prosperous life. There's a kind of prosperity, happiness, comfortability, we can say, tranquility,
yes,
that we can achieve by this kind of spirituality. So that's why if you look at, nowadays, if you look at to the modern societies, you see that mysticism,
yes,
Buddhism, Hinduism, Islam, these kind of religions which or schools of thoughts which have a kind of spiritual teachings for the new generations, they're always, the number of the followers of these kind of sects or religions are increasing.
Yes.
That is why also when it comes to the Muslim mystics like Maulana Rumi,
yes,
or the Ibn Arabi or the other, for example, mystical figures, you see their works, their books are published widely, worldwide, and also the teachings and the doctrines of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim salatu wasalam, Ashura or Muharram or Arba'een,
yes,
for example, the Arba'een March becomes day by day very much well known to the universe, to the whole world.
Mm-hmm.
Because of what? Because all the people try to connect themselves,
yes,
to that spiritual reality in,
yes,
this world.
Okay.
Because it does exist, but the problem is that unfortunately in the modern schools of thought, they try to ignore and reject this phase of life.
Right.
But now they understood that, okay, it's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
We have to find out a way to contact ourselves or to connect ourselves to that spirituality.
Yes.
Because without that spirituality, there would be no real prosperity, no real, mm-hmm, kind of...
Or purpose in life, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
no
right.
Tranquility would, okay, be there. That's why you see that nowadays, psychology, for example, psychiatrists in,
yes,
in the West, they have better role nowadays in the West because they try to what we can say, to fill this kind of vacuum that they have in their lives as the counselors, for example, as the counselors, as the people who treat sometimes to cure, for example, sometimes the spiritual diseases or psychological diseases, and they have very important role nowadays, and particularly in European societies. That is why I think, it is important, but we have to introduce the true spirituality. The problem is that sometimes there are a kind of misconception of spirituality, misunderstanding of spirituality.
Yes. Unfortunately, the concept of spirituality today is misused, abused. You know, for example, yoga, meditation, TM, drugs, sexuality, are introduced as something in order to give you a spiritual growth. But what is the difference between Islamic spirituality with all these new mystical movements that are taking place in the world, Said Mohsen?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Well, it is not only about the mystical movements, because when we look at the spirituality, sometimes it is yoga and meditation.
Yes.
Sometimes it is known as getting in touch with nature. You know, people who go to the nature, do daily activities, they find spirituality in that. Sometimes it is the expression through art, and you necessarily, you should not be an artist to do that. But any kind of art that you do, which gives you peace, a kind of peace, you feel a peace, that is known as spirituality. On the other hand, like spirituality and the human connections, like the people which you... you're dealing or socializing on the daily basis with those who you enjoy more time, it is said like it's a spiritual aspect that you have. So there are different definitions or different ways of expressing spirituality, but none of these is the true spirituality, what Islam is talking about. What Islam talks about is the spirituality basically is to reaching to your own soul, number one, getting connected with the God. This is important because, you know, in Islam, when we talk about the human have two dimensions. One is the apparent dimension, which is this body that we have, and the other is the soul. Now, how do we prove soul, for example, if someone asks? For example, you know, when we talk about the body, we have hands, we have legs, we have ear, eyes, tongue. So if I ask, what does ears do? We say, like, it hears, eyes see. Tongue speaks or talks. And with the mouth, we eat, we speak. With the hands, we grab the things. With the legs, we walk. And if I say that, does body walks? You say no. Body walks with its legs.
Yes.
So still you're bringing the parts with the body. So we cannot say like body sees, body walks, body is grabbing things. No, we say body grabs things with the hands. But there is another thing. In which when we say, for example, I see, I walk, I eat, you don't say like you see, you walk with the hands or with the eyes or with the... It is understandable for us. Why? The reason is when I refer to I, it is actually the soul which I'm referring. And that is where everything is being collected and it's the unification of all the parts. So we have two things. Even a disabled person, the person who does not have, for example, two legs and two arms, he says I. When he says I, he does not mean that I without my legs and, you know, hands. So it means that there is something else in us. Islam talks about the soul or the spirit, because the spirituality is concerned with the spirit. So it talks about the spirit. Now, this spirit needs to reach to the perfection. It needs perfection. It needs food. It needs to be fed the way we feed our body to grow. The spirit also needs something, a food, a kind of food to grow. And that food is being introduced by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And when we give this food to the soul, this is what we are gaining in spirituality. So the more we feed our soul or spirit with the things that are said by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, we are increasing in our spirituality. Now, this can be by getting connected with the authorities of Allah, like Ahlul Bayt or the Prophet, or the way our dear guest gave the example of, for example, the Karbala. We do Mar Arba'in, we walk, we visit the Holy Shrine.
Yes.
These are the things that increase in our spirituality. Why? The reason is that when we are there, we feel peace.
Yes.
That's you know, right. Even, you know, in today's, like, at the moment, you know that the WhatsApp, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, all of these things are banned. in the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Yes.
But still the visitors who come and those who visit the holy shrines from the West, although they don't have the, you know, the connection with the with that word, or, you know, they cannot use these, we can say, medias, still they're not panicking, they're not in stress. They're feeling a peace inside them. It is because the spirit, the feed or the food that it needed, they are basically providing that, we can say, like sustenance to the spirit.
That's right.
Basically, when Islam talks about the spirituality, it is more getting connected to the God.
That's right.
And what God has said for us to feed that to our soul.
That's in Islamic spirituality, we talk about a concept which is called Hayat-e Tayyibah, or the pure life, lifestyle. Allama Tabatabai has also has different and beautiful speeches in his book, Rasalatul Velaya. This is really outstanding book. I invite our dear listeners to refer to this book. It is a little bit complicated, Rasalatul Velaya, but nice concepts about ta'abbud, we can say servitude to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, are over there. But when we talk about Hayat-e Tayyibah based on spirituality in Islam, the first thing that comes to our mind is that this spirituality we are talking about is a trust of Allah in our hand. It is not something coming from the brain and tranquility and peace of mind. Rather, it is something from the upper world, Shaykh Rouhani. So if we want to develop such kind of ma'naviya in our life, what should we do?
Yes, of course, as you rightly mentioned, in Islam, we have the principle of monotheism or oneness of God or Tawheed.
Yes.
One of the aspects of Tawheed is this that you mentioned, that whatever we achieve in our life, particularly that Hayat-e Tayyibah, that prosperous life or the perfect, we can say, life, is something like a gift, like a blessing, like a bounty of Almighty Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that is bestowed upon us by Him. We have a very nice sentence by Amir al-Mu'minin Ali alayhi salatu wasalam. He wrote to Malik al-Ashtar in that letter. He wrote that, "O Malik, if sometimes you see that people talk positively about you, good things about you, you must know that it is not you. It is Almighty Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that put these positive things in the hearts of the people, in the minds of the people. Then they talk about you in that way."
Yes.
You know, even if we sometimes are praised by people or appreciated by the people, we should know that it is a kind of blessings of Almighty Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. This is a muwahhid's life, that whatever good things you have in your life, you have to understand that it is a blessings of Almighty Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. It is not something that you achieved by your own self. You know, that's why if you understand that whatever I have in my life, it is like a blessing. It is like a ni'mah, it is like a mercy, a bounty of Almighty Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, then look how much peaceful, how much secure, what we can say, how much happy you will be. Mm-hmm. Because it means that you are, the, all the blessings of Almighty Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is being showered upon you.
Yes.
And you're always being blessed by Almighty Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala's blessings. That's why this is a ma'nawi life.
Okay, thank you, Almighty Sayyid Mohsen Naqvi and Shaykh Rouhani, for a nice elaboration regarding the whatness of Islamic spirituality, the concept of Hayat-e Tayyibah, the pure life, and how to find the kind of pure life in today's world. It was very kind of you, and thank you much, dear listeners, for listening to us. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. To another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah. Yep.
يقولها لنا يوم القيامة أمتي أمتي يقولها شفاعة أنا لها أنا لها
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,645 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Iran Sat or Bat 5 and Intel Sat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
وقضى ربك ألا تعبدوا إلا إياه وبالوالدين إحسانا.
Your Lord has decreed that you shall not worship anyone except Him, and He has enjoined kindness to parents.
For humanity.
Sayyid Abdullah Al-Musawi.
A'udhu billahi min ash-shaytan ar-rajim. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Brothers, sisters, dear listeners, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome to the program For Humanity. Continuing the topic that we've been discussing in previous episodes, and obviously I do keep in mind that some of you might be listening for the first time, so we also try to include you, that we try to get to the stage where we try to cleanse our hearts or go through the process of cleansing our hearts, tazkiyah. And we spoke about the importance of that, and how one should always maintain himself. There has to be a system of maintenance, a system of surveillance, and a system of hisab, holding oneself accountable for the actions and the words that they say. because you might think that the actions that you did and the words that you said will just fly like that. Not in the court of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Among the things that makes the questioning easy for a person, obviously, to question himself and to monitor and to have this surveillance system on himself, there are a number of things he needs to do. One is that a person needs to sit with himself, and he needs to talk to himself and take some oaths on himself that he will not do such and such and such. For example, he says, I should not use my tongue for backbiting or lying or any action that might lead to haram through these two parts. Or for example, the person says, I'm not going to eat that haram food, for example. So whatever it is that we do, we take an oath on ourselves that we will not commit. These oaths that we take on ourselves, they do help to a certain extent. They do help in the process of purification and trying to cleanse our hearts. And once we do take these oaths on ourselves, then obviously we need to maintain this stage where we're at, where we are not allowed to do certain things because we put a bound on ourselves. We need to constantly survey it and have the surveillance on it always. It's a constant surveillance. It's 24/7 surveillance. This way we could maintain the oaths and the conditions that we've set on ourselves. And in this regard, Amir al-Mu'mineen, salamullah alayhi, he says, إِنَّ الْحَازِمَ مَنْ شَغَلَ نَفْسَهُ فَأَصْلَحَهَا وَحَبَسَهَا عَنْ أَهْوَائِهَا وَلَذَّاتِهَا. He says, the person who is strong enough to do things is the one that can fix himself, and he would avoid trying to get into people's businesses and try to control that self. وَحَبَسَهَا عَنْ أَهْوَائِهَا. And he controls it and restricts it from its own desires and needs. وَلَذَّاتِهَا. And all the things that it finds pleasure in. And then he says, وَإِنَّ لِلْعَاقِلِ بِنَفْسِهِ عَنْ الدُّنْيَا وَمَا فِيهَا وَأَهْلِهَا شُغْلًا. He says, but to the actual person who understands who Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is, they never think of themselves. They never think of what they could be doing. Now, before we continue, let us take a short break and then we will come back.
Dear listeners, you are listening to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. You can send us your emails, comments, and questions at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program For Humanity. Just before the break, we were saying that an intellectual person is the one that leaves people aside, and he only thinks about himself and how he can fix and rectify himself, and obviously not to give the self its desires and needs, and is constantly under surveillance. And obviously this aqil is the one who just thinks about himself in this dunya, and thinking about himself only, it will make him busy and occupied from thinking about the world itself or those in the world itself. That will keep him busy. So this is also, it helps put a person on the right track. Another thing that we also need to keep in mind is that we need to from time to time go through the process of reproaching, as we say, etap. Reproaching means that you say to yourself, why did you do this action? Why did you do that? Why did you say this about this person? Why did you lie about a person? Why did you, I don't know, take the rights of another person? And such talks usually helps a person. Amir al-Mu'mineen says, من وبخ نفسه على العيوب